Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide," Jehovah Jireh. And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." This name of God probably might be considered the most abused name of God that we believe in. The God that will provide. You hear about terms like prosperity of gospel. If you give, God will reward you by giving, by doubling what you give. Trust me, Project Renewal campaign has nothing to do with prosperity gospel. And we don't talk about the idea that God will reward you if you give your money. 911, we dial up God when we're in a problem situation. God will provide because, after all, I'm a Christian. I'm saved. I trusted in Christ as my Savior. He should provide for me. And so this whole idea of God's provision becomes very abused in our lives. Now, up to this point in the previous 10 chapters, Abraham had already experienced some of God's provision. But several times during this provision, on Abraham's insistence, he felt like and believed that God needed help. That God wasn't enough, that God with Abraham needed some help. So Abraham steps in and tries to help God out because, in all honesty, more than enough is usually not fast enough for each of us, is it? Psychologist Jim Stone, who wrote The 7 Laws of Impatience, said that one of the laws, I believe the 4th law, impatience motivates us to reduce the costs of reaching our goal or to switch goals. Ever been stuck in traffic? You're on the highway. One lane is going a little bit faster, northbound 131. So what do? You switch lanes to get into that lane because it's going faster. What happens immediately? Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law states, every time you switch lanes to go faster, you will go slower than the lane you were in. That's Murphy's Law. That's the reality of that truth. But that's what impatience does. It forces us to reduce the cost, and it forces us to switch lanes quickly. God had told Abraham, "Through you I will bless you. I will give you a great nation, and through that nation, the nations of the world will be blessed." It's the second greatest covenant that God ever made with man. But Abram was impatient, and he felt like being number two was way too restrictive, and God needed help. He and Sarai were getting old. They were not having children. His wife, no doubt embarrassed by not having any children, struggling with the fact that she was supposed to have a child, tells Abraham, "Look, I'll give you my handmaid. You go, have a child with her, and then we'll solve this whole issue." So he does that, and Ishmael is born. But it doesn't solve the issue. It creates massive chaos. It creates massive anger. It creates massive bitterness and deceit. 15 years later, Sarai is pregnant. They're on traveling through a foreign country. Abraham is scared of this particular king. And so without trusting God and believing that God is enough, he lies to this king, who finds out the truth and then challenges Abraham about his belief in his own God. Who's number two? Abraham had faith. Abraham had faith, but he also struggled with who's number two until this chapter. Look at verse 1. Verse 1, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." You know, I like in the ESV, it states, "After all these things, God tested Abraham." What's the first thing to know about the provision of God? Trials and testing will happen. It will happen. There is no avoidance of that. There will be tests. There will be trials in our life. And our responses will shape a path to follow. it will happen. Andy Stanley said something that is pretty profound about that pathway. He says that whatever we're doing right now is not just affecting the here and now choices we make, but it's leading us on a very specific path leading to a very specific destination. Maybe those three C's of life, you've seen them on social media, pretty popular. As a Christian, we might add the fourth C, and that would be Christ. But notice, you must make a choice to take a chance, or your life will never change. And we would say, you must make a choice to take a chance on Christ, or your life will never change. The reality and the truth of all of this is God enough. And the truth of these things, that for Abraham, he struggled and he knew the reality that tests will really happen. I love this word that I found in preparation for this. It was pretty impressive. It's the word, and you'll like it. It's the word shaping. The word shaping. In the dictionary, when you think of shaping, it says setting oneself to perform a particular task. There's a shaping that goes on in our life through trials and tribulations. God was shaping, God was molding Abraham, God was moving him to perform a very special task that in the end, through you, through your offspring, will be a great nation that will bless the world. And oh, by the way, through that will come the birth of a Savior. Through you, Abraham. But there's all these tests. There's all these, it wasn't as if God didn't know the outcome. Remember, God knows all things. But the key for Abraham was his ability to work through that test and to persevere and truly come to grips was, is God enough? Will God provide? The truth of that is that we go through trials, we go through testing because it builds us up. It strengthens up. It prepares us to face things in life. Number of years ago, and my son was in the Navy, was stationed on Coronado Island in outside San Diego. I went to visit him one time. It was actually the exact same weekend that Osama bin Laden was taken out by Navy Team SEAL 6. But I was driving along this where the beach is. If you've ever seen any of the Navy SEALs training, they have this beach where they train on. It's right along the island. It's kind of an extended spit that goes out there. And I was driving along there. I was by myself, and the beach was empty. So most of you would not doubt this, but I got out of the car, and for a brief moment in my life, I experienced what Navy SEALs go through, at least in my mind. So I walked along the beach, and I was pretending, carrying those big logs on my back, and I felt like I needed to dive and roll around and jump up with an M16 or whatever it is. And I felt like I wanted to play Army like I used to do as a kid in the woods in the back of Washington. But no, I was by myself, and nobody was there, which is a good thing because that would have went viral on YouTube. And I was just messing around, but I didn't go into the water because I knew there were sharks. But I was really having a good time. I was experiencing the Navy SEALs. Navy SEALs have what they call Hell Week. Hell Week is where they get an average of less than 4 hours of sleep at night. They're running and working out over 200 miles in 1 week. They're doing all kinds of major tasks. And if they don't make it through this week, they're not a Navy SEAL. Why would they do that? Why would there be such testing and such trial? Why would there be such perseverance? Because for the Navy SEALs, they're called upon to do tasks that most are not capable of doing. It would be foolish to put them into those tasks without the preparation. Let me say the fact in our lives that we're facing the greatest enemy that anyone has ever faced. It's an enemy that's more deceptive. It's an enemy that's more destructive. Jesus Christ said this enemy is a murderer. He's a killer. He's a liar. That's our enemy. And we can say all we want about God being providing, God will provide, but in ourselves, if we're not prepared, if we're not ready, we have struggles, we have problems. So I like that phrase, after these things, it will happen. Abraham's obedience and failures in the past brought him to this point. God's shaping. You see, here's the thing. It's not really, is God truly enough? That's not the question. The real question is, will we let him be enough? See, the reality of God as a creator is God is enough. That's not the question. The question is, will we let him be enough in our life? Jesus Christ said, in this world, you will have trouble. But take heart. Who does that? We do. What's he literally saying? He's literally saying, take my heart. I will overcome the world. But you've got to take my heart and make it part of you. That critical element, that reality of who we are. David said, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. But he still has to walk through the valley. He still has to go through that shadow of death. There is no avoidance. It is the reality of life that we are going to go through that testing. And the question being number two is, God really enough? Is God really enough? And see, that battle of testing deals with the single most critical aspect of life, obedience. What does God say in verse 1 and 2? Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love. Think how incredibly shocking and painful that had to sound to Abraham. And here's the problem. We already know the ending, don't we? We already know the ending. You can just read ahead and see the ending of it. You know, that's the thing about the Bible. The Bible is the one great big spoiler of life. We know the ending of every story in the Bible, and we typically start with the ending and then work our way back. And we just say, well, God didn't want Isaac to die anyway, so look at the ending. But that's not the case. That's not the reality for Abraham. It's not whether God wanted Isaac to die or not, as much as it was a direct command from the heart of a father to sacrifice his only son. And God goes to great lengths to say, not just your son, but your only son. I wasn't ignoring Ishmael. What he was saying is that Isaac is the only son of promise. That's where my provision will come through. There's only one son of promise. You can trust in a lot of things in life, but there's only one son of promise. And you take that one son of promise, and he goes on, he says, whom you love. Whom you love. You take that only one son of promise. God knew what he was asking Abraham. God knew what he was asking Abraham to do, and he was, in a sense, identifying with Abraham. I know what this is costing you. It's costing you your son whom you love. Am I enough for you? This is the son you waited 25 years for. The interesting thing about this question, this is the seventh and the last time that God asks Abraham for obedience. It's almost as if this is the culmination of all the events of his life leading up to this singular point of context. It's the last time in recorded scripture that God asks Abraham for clear obedience. God appears to Abraham. He's asking for this obedience. And the parallels between Abraham and this and Jesus Christ are unmistakable. Look at verse 3. Early the next morning, it's clear that the Bible is saying, here's how quickly Abraham responded. The very next morning, he got up, saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and we will come back to you. Look at verse 8. In verse 8, the boy is asking, where's the lamb for the offering, Isaac says. Verse 8, Abraham said, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. God himself will provide the lamb. The parallels, the image, this great type of Christ, perhaps is the most graphic in the Old Testament of that picture of that future salvation. Notice the similarities. It was the last test of obedience, the sacrifice. Jesus Christ had come to earth. For 3 years he had served the Father. But the final test of sacrifice was this willingness to be crucified on the cross. His only son whom he loved. God the Father said during the baptism of Jesus, he said, this is my son. This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. This is the one I love. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. They rode in on a donkey. They traveled 3 days. The wood was placed on Isaac's shoulders. And most Christian historians view that as the cross being placed on Christ's shoulders. The imagery is graphic. The imagery is clear. God was asking a father to sacrifice his child. Now, in those days, child sacrifice wasn't unusual. What was unusual is that most of the time it was very small children, because small children were considered very innocent, very pure, and they were to appease an angry God. Isaac was not a small child. Isaac probably was in his 20s, maybe even early 30s. Isaac was not a child. And here's something else. Never before had God ever asked for a human sacrifice. It was always animals. Never before had God expressed a need or desire for a human sacrifice. So for 3 days, 3 days' journey, 3 days for Abraham to beg God to reconsider, 3 days for what's going on in this dad's mind. We can't even begin to understand. But for Abraham, can you imagine what's going through his mind? Is this God's way of dealing with my past failures? Is this why this is happening? Is Isaac paying for my sin, my guilt, my failure in past tests? Is God somehow getting back at me? Is God somehow putting this on me because I deserve this? Is there something? Can you imagine all that going through his mind? Can you imagine as you sit here this morning what goes through your mind when things like that happen? Do you find yourself angry with God? Do you find yourself wondering, is this why God's doing this to me? Is this why this is happening to somebody I love? What's going on in my life? All these questions for 3 days, they moved. Would God keep his promise? Ultimately, it came down to this. Abraham had nothing left but faith and obedience. He had nothing left but faith and obedience. Look at verse 5. At the end of verse 5, he says to the servants, "We will worship and what? We will come back. We will worship and we will come back." There is a passage in the book of Hebrews, and you have to turn there, but I put it up here on the over for you to see. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 19, that's the famous Hall of Faith chapter where it lists all by faith, Noah by faith, Isaac by faith. Abraham occupies the most by faith of any of the individuals mentioned. And one of the verses, verse 19, says by faith, and check this out, Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. I want you to take a minute to let that soak into your mind. Nothing left but faith and obedience. For Abraham, God could raise the dead. How could Abraham reason that? We sit here again after the fact that we have all kinds of scriptural evidence for resurrection. Most importantly, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Abraham had no reference, none. Up to that point in time, there was no resurrection. There was no concept. There was no discussion. In the recorded scriptures, there was never any mention of resurrection or coming back from the dead. Now, granted, people lived a lot longer then, but people still died. How could Abraham reason that God would bring him to the dead? How's God going to do that? Well, let me point this out to you. You can only reason if you know God enough to understand why. It is the only way you can reason. It's the only way that you can come to grips with any sense of reality is how well do you know God. Abram, through all of the trials before, came to grips with who God was. Yes, through his mistakes. Yes, through his failures. But still, he was able to reason because he knew the reality of who God is. Choices, issues, broken dreams, chaos, they're going to increase in your life. The question is, will your reasoning about God increase and keep pace with those choices? That's the reality of this test. That's the reality of this progression. Abraham reasoned. And then notice something else. Can we go? Yeah. Look at that phrase. And figuratively speaking. So he reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. Figuratively speaking, what does that mean? Here's what I want to propose to you. What that means is that in his mind, in Abraham's mind, by choice of obedience, Isaac was already sacrificed. Before Abraham ever took the knife, before he bound up Isaac, before he laid him on the altar, in his mind, Isaac was sacrificed and dead. He had to come to grips with that reality. I believe that the emotions of trying to resolve that sacrifice at the moment of preparing his son, that if he tried to do that all at the same time, he would not have been able to do that. He had to reason in his mind. In his mind, the ultimate of obedience was Abraham thought and believed Isaac was already sacrificed. Figuratively, in his mind, he believed and knew that Isaac would die. What do you think? The key is in your mind. When do you know what you know? It all begins in your mind. He reasoned in his mind. God's asked me to sacrifice for 3 days and three nights. What do you think Abraham was doing? For 3 days on that journey, I can assure you he's communicating with God. He is preparing himself for what is about to be asked for him to do. And by the time he got to that altar, by the time he got to that position, in his mind, Isaac was already sacrificed. Abraham had made that decision. He had made that choice. He solidified it in his mind. He knew what he was going to do because the circumstances of knowing God and believing God would provide was the dominant thing for him. He knew. He understood. Paul said, if by the Spirit, that's the working in your minds, if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live. Philippians 2, let this mind be in you. 2 Corinthians 9, 7, talking about sacrificially giving of your finances. It says, let a man purpose in his heart. Let him determine in his heart this is going to happen, and then he can do it without being forced, but he can do it with a joyful spirit. Abraham purposed in his mind. Isaac was already dead. He was already a sacrifice, and that's why the writer of Hebrews can say, in fact, figuratively speaking, he gave Isaac back from the dead. Because in his mind, Isaac was already gone. It's a painful reality, and the truth of what that is. In your mind, you know. My wife Vicky had a dog named Dusty. Dusty was with her for over 13 years. Dusty, without question, was her best friend in many ways because he was with her through all the different times of her life, all the different times alone and quiet. For the last several years of Dusty's life, he was struggling with his heart. Ironic, because when we got married, that's what I was struggling with. As a matter of fact, Dusty's pills, LASIK, was the same thing I was taking. We probably could have interchanged them, but I didn't try. But we knew. And so the question was, when would she have to make that decision to put Dusty down? We thought it would be one summer because he was struggling, but the medication helped him, and he was spunky, and we got another dog, and that other dog played around, and we thought, well, he's going to train him, and so it'll be a great bout, and it was, and it kind of elevated Dusty. He got a little grumpy because the dog wouldn't quit grabbing his tail, but he had a good life, and he was enjoying it. And I would say to Vicky, you will know in your heart, you will know when the right time comes. And last year, just about a week ago, she knew in her heart this was the right time. And as painful as it was, as hard as it was sitting in the doctor's office, she was able to let him go. Why? because she purposed in her heart, this was the time. See, that's what God was asking Abraham. Purpose in your heart, this is the time. This is more important than the actual event itself. Purpose in your heart, purpose in your mind. And the truth of the reality is that Abraham, with nothing left, with faith and obedience, in his mind, he had to come to grips with this, that using my faith allows my faith to use me. We said that many times as a congregation. Using my faith allows my faith to use me. It starts with a deliberate choice in my mind. It starts with an obedience that's filled with hope. Abraham believed God's promise through Isaac. He knew that God would somehow raise him. He'll work it out. He'll raise him from the dead. He even said to Isaac in verse 6 to 8, God will provide the lamb. God will provide what that is. He wasn't lying to Isaac. He wasn't being deceptive to Isaac. He wasn't trying to make Isaac feel good before he gets killed himself. He was telling Isaac, God will provide what we need. You see, that's the truth. It's interesting in that passage verse 8, he says, God himself will provide the lamb. Himself. Peter in the New Testament, 1 Peter said, he himself alone bore our sins in his body on the tree. Later in chapter 5, Peter would also say, after you have suffered a little, he himself restores you and makes you strong. There's a singular role. Being number two recognizes the sole source of salvation, God's provision. Why is he enough? Why is he a God who provides? Because it's depending on the Lord himself, not just the promise. If you don't walk out of here with anything else, walk out with that. It is depending on the Lord himself, not the promise. Because the promise keeps us focused here. Depending on the Lord keeps us focused here. God's promises are a privilege sought for, not a right of entitlement. Paul talks about being number two, depending on the Lord himself, not just the promise. Whatever you've learned and seen in me, whatever you've heard and seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. What does it take to know all of him is more than all of me? I want to introduce to you a family that attends here at Rush Creek, the Williams family. This is what it means to be number two, a mother and a father hoping for a child.
Hello, we're the Williams family. I'm Corey.
I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Rihanna Grace.
When Jennifer and I married 21 years ago, we could relate to Abraham and Sarah, but for different reasons. They were aged and Sarah was barren. We weren't old, but a few years earlier, doctors told me that I would never father children. Jennifer and I married knowing that that was the case.
Of course, as happens when couples get married, people start to question, when are you going to have a baby? It hurt. Infertility hurt. It felt like a life crisis.
After a few years, we looked into adoption. Wow, was that expensive. Not to mention a long process. We also found out Jennifer wasn't old enough to qualify.
I know my dreams of a station wagon with three kids and a dog with ears flopping in the wind was never going to happen. It was still hard to see so many friends pregnant. Being invited to baby showers, cute pictures of adorable babies, meeting new people who would ask, how many children do you have? Diaper commercials and Mother's Day only reminded me of what I didn't have. Growing up, I knew couples who didn't want to have a baby. But I not only wanted to have a baby, I wanted twins. I loved on my sister's girls like they were my own, yet it was not the same.
God blessed Abraham and his barren wife, Sarah, with a son in their old age.
God blessed my parents after 7 years of marriage with a miracle, me. I was the answer to many years of prayers. My name, Rihanna Grace, means a blessing of God's favor.
Pretty sure, Rihanna, you remind your parents of that blessing. Yes. Who's number two? When you come to grips with the reality that it's more about him than what I want, the promise, you find that God is more than enough. That's where Abraham had to get to. Here's a family hoping for a child, and there was a father being asked to sacrifice a child, a promise. The truth in the matter and the reality for Abraham is that he had to come to grips with that, and he was able to find his path. Look at verse 10. And in verse 10, then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Do you sense something missing here? I do. Something from Abraham, something from we'd expect from ourselves, hanging by a branch on a cliff, sinking into the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Lord, save me. God, I know what you're asking, but please, if there's any other way, God, please show me why I have to do this. Just give me a reason for this cancer in my body. Give me a reason for that disease destroying that person I love. God, just give me something to hang on to. Give me some reality of life. Give me some picture. If you just tell me why, I have no problem killing my son, but please, God, please show me the reason. Nothing. None of that from Abraham. Why? He purposed in his heart to obey. Because he reasoned in his mind, God will provide. Provision follows obedience. I can't say that enough. Provision follows obedience. God will always provide what he knows we need. Being number two is realizing it's not always what we want. Provision follows obedience. Is God truly enough? Praise team is going to come out and lead us in that chorus of that song. And as you sing this now, sing it with that different context. It's not about the promise. It's about the one making the promise. In Genesis 22, we see a father demonstrating how much love he has for a God. On Calvary, we see a God demonstrating how much love for humanity. Will you stand with me? Is he truly enough for you?